In this episode of Movie Wallahs, we talk about A Walk in the Woods and learning to drive. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Hello, hello.
Hello.
Greetings.
So I want to talk about something that we very rarely talk about on Movie Wallahs, which is books.
Okay.
And a book in particular, because Rashmi, you were up till like 1 a.m. last night.
Oh my goodness, I was up till about 1:30 this morning.
Reading.
The Martian. And I actually put a post out on our Movie Wallahs Facebook page with the trailer for this one.
Yeah, I've gone complete. I've become an ostrich. I don't want to know anything about the movie until I watch it. I'm too scared now because I love the book so much.
Yeah, because you read it pretty fast as well. Mm-hmm. I remember actually we were all on our way to LA Film Festival together.
Yes,
and I was. And you had it in your bag.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I read it late last year.
You said you read it first, Joe.
Yeah, and then you said read it.
I would say I read it kind of late last year, and just it was such a page turner for me. It's written by a guy, Andy Weir, first time author. He's a programmer, actually turned
NASA,
author.
Yeah.
And he put together this story that's done really well. It took a bit of a time to grow in terms of its distribution, but yeah, can't wait for the movie. So just wanted to mention the book simply because the movie's coming out soon. It's made by Ridley Scott. It's got a terrific cast. Matt Damon is the lead, and honestly, I hate doing this as kind of an objective reviewer, but I am so excited.
Yeah, I'm scared. I'm scared the movie cannot possibly, because it was such a treat for me. And I hate that even the tagline on the poster, I think, tells you something about it. Because when I was reading the book, I thought it would be like a Gravity kind of situation. And it's only partly a Gravity kind of situation. So I think the less you know about it, the better you are. But
yeah
I look forward to that with bated breath.
And I think Matt Damon is so well cast. Mm-hmm.
I raise it only to explain the metaphorical bags under your eyes today,
yes,
because you've been tired all day.
I have. I ended up snoozing on the sofa for a while today.
And you know, we were talking earlier in our previous podcast about how, you know, seemingly good movies with good cast don't get distribution in, mm-hmm, you know, in the theaters, and bad movies get distribution. Well, talk about, this was a guy who was a first-time author, but he wrote this brilliant book. Anybody who would have read the first three pages of that novel should have been hooked. And he sent it out to HarperCollins. He sent it out to all the publishers. They all rejected him. And eventually, he self-published. He was releasing a chapter free every week. And he released the whole book for free until eventually it got picked up on Amazon's free books and it went up, you know, on the Amazon popularity list. And then a publisher stepped in and actually released a paperback. So his is one of the few success stories, but the whole media business is effed up.
Yep.
I kind of like that it's becoming almost like open source.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like the platform,
right,
is becoming very level again.
Creators.
I kind of feel like, I know there's going to be a lot of junk that we might get as well, or stuff that isn't as good as others, because
yeah,
sometimes those publishing houses do that curating for us. But I'm kind of excited by the fact that,
well, they're no longer the tastemakers.
Correct.
I mean, I think, you know, right now creators have a great way to reach audiences. Movie Wallahs is a typical example of something that couldn't have existed,
exactly,
without the democratization of the internet. I mean, you know, here we are, three schmucks talking movies, and you know, we have an outlet and we have a voice. So, you know, I think that's happening with music and publishing and movies to a certain extent as well, you know.
No, I'm glad for that playing field, but I'm just disappointed with whoever it is, the interns at HarperCollins and at Random House and all these big publishers. Are they even doing their jobs? Are they even looking at the stuff which is coming to them for publication? What does it speak about them?
You have to wonder what the process is. I mean, they must receive, you know,
yes, read
hundreds
the first three pages
of manuscripts every day.
Yes.
You know, I think unless they come with like a check or some kind
or
of
a big name, yeah,
incentive to read them. But
anyway,
anyhow, before we get into our reviews, we thought I think we should quickly touch on our Netflix picks of the week, our segment called I Can't Find Anything on Netflix. Because pet peeve of ours, people say they can't find stuff on Netflix, and we think there is tons to look at. So, Yazdi, what's your pick of the week?
So my recommendation this week is a film called Human Capital. It's an Italian film.
Yes, you've told us about that many times.
I think it's called Il Capitale Umano or something, some Italian version of that. It played last year at the Tribeca Film Festival. It was last year Italy's submission for the Best Foreign Film Oscar. It didn't get picked up as one of the five, which completely confounds me. But this is an impossibly stylish, beautifully constructed, wonderfully complex interweaving of five different stories which come together, and then the movie kind of turns its back and watches those events unfold again, but from a different perspective.
Ooh.
And each of these stories are equally fascinating. It talks about class, it talks about wealth, it talks about, you know, stagnancy in marriages. It talks about the need for young people to create something cool and how far you'll go for that. It's about drugs and class warfare. It's just brilliant. When I went to see it in New York at the Tribeca Film Festival, my friend who's Italian, you know, came with me, and she said everybody in Italy knows that this director is one of the greats, and yet he's not somehow recognized in this movie. I would really recommend people to watch it. You know, it's got six different stories, and I promise I'll shut up in a minute, but one of the leads in the movie, who has maybe a 20% role in the whole movie, she's so goddamn good. She won Best Actress at Tribeca Film Festival last year, and just watch it. You'll thank me. It's incredibly stylish.
I am going to put that right on our queue, Yazdi.
Human Capital.
I like this section because it's actually films, Joe, that you and I haven't necessarily heard of either. So I do like this section. It is rather self-serving. Okay, so my tip of the week is a film that we saw last year at San Diego Film Festival, and it's called Time Lapse. And I would class it as an alternative time travel movie. It's about these three people who discover almost like a Polaroid machine, a camera that takes pictures 24 hours in the future.
Or rather, it spits out the picture.
Correct.
It spits of something out that it will see 24 hours in the future.
Oh, what a nice concept.
Yeah. And it's really interesting. And it's one of those time travel sci-fi movies that's not very sci-fi, but it is clearly sci-fi. And it stayed with me. I have not forgotten about this movie, and I was delighted when I saw it come up on Netflix. Yeah. So this is one of those that meets the criteria of, we saw it at a film festival, and now you can see it too. Three unknowns in the main roles, really well acted. You just don't know how it's going to end. It's such a mind fuck. Great movie, Time Lapse.
I'll second that recommendation too. I mean, that was a great, fun film. Yeah, did you get a chance to see that?
No, I didn't.
It's very much a smaller movie, but it's really cleverly constructed. And more than anything, it's about the characters.
It's based around
the central premise of this camera that can't be moved, taking pictures. And it's ingenious because oftentimes you have no idea how the story over the next 24 hours will advance to create the situation that the photo has taken. Brilliant stuff.
Very cool.
My pick of the week is another film festival one. This is one that we saw at South by Southwest 2013. And this movie did get a release. This is Don John.
Yes.
By one of our favorite actors, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He decided to pick up the director's role in this movie, as well as the lead role. And it was released in 2013. It did get a small audience a theater distribution, but it came and went so quickly and almost without fanfare, which is so disappointing, because for a directorial debut, I think this movie was brilliantly cut and written. More than anything, it has one of the best performances that I've seen. Best Scarlett Johansson.
I agree.
I finally agree.
Yeah. And the movie's premise, just to let you know, it's kind of a comedy slash, you know, drama, but Don John, played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, is essentially a guy that goes out every weekend. He can pull every any woman that he likes, but his relationships seem to always fail because at night he is secretly addicted to pornography. And that's the basic premise, which sounds like a terrible movie to watch, but it's actually a lot of fun to see it play out. And again, great performances by both leads.
And Joe and I actually got to interview Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Tony Danza, who plays his father in this movie. So that was fun for us to do at South by Southwest that year as well.
Yeah, it was very insightful. I mean, you know, Levitt himself is a very intense young guy. I mean, I don't know how young he is, but he comes across, you know, very, very young, but he's so serious about
his art,
his acting, and, you know, for somebody to pick up the role of director, I think he did a lot of the editing in this movie himself as well, made it on a very small budget. It's a terrific feat, and
Julianne Moore's even in this movie.
Yeah, I hope to see more from him.
Yeah,
and he almost plays like a Mike situation from the Jersey Shore type character. So it's actually a Joseph Gordon-Levitt that we've not actually seen before. Same as the Scarlett Johansson, who is amazing. I honestly believe I agree with you, Joe. It's an unsung performance by Scarlett Johansson. I would have nominated her that year. I think we even said that on our podcast. She was superb.
Yeah, I mean, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is one of my heroes. I mean, the very fact that he even exists in Hollywood is a miracle. I love everything he does. Speaking of which, his series on television called One Hit Record or something like that is the first.
Which is actually his Twitter handle.
Yeah, it just landed up on Netflix. The first season's available, and I can't wait to watch it. I haven't seen it, but I always thought that Scarlett Johansson was a good actor, but a little bit overrated. And for all those people in the world who think Scarlett Johansson is overrated, please go watch this movie. She makes that character just something else. And even Julianne Moore, I mean, it's interesting that both of them eventually, you know, Scarlett Johansson then had Her, which was released later on, and she got a lot of credit for that. And of course, Julianne Moore eventually got her Oscar a year later for Still Alice, but what wonderful female performances in that movie. Yeah. Actually, it's a great film.
Yeah.
Period, yeah.
So, Don John, Time Lapse, and Human Capital.
Human Capital, yes.
There's plenty to watch on Netflix. And just before we move away from the Netflix mention, Amazon Prime members also get to view, if you have Amazon Prime, you also get the opportunity to watch films via streaming, but they've recently updated their iPhone and iPad apps so that those movies can be downloaded for offline viewing. So one of the big hindrances of Netflix is if you're on a plane, tough luck, you're not going to be able to see anything. With Amazon Prime, you can actually download those to your device. So little tip out there for those of you that have the membership. All right, let's talk about our movies of the week. So we have A Walk in the Woods and Learning to Drive. Where would you like to start?
Let's go to the woods. Okay, and I'm introing that. So, A Walk in the Woods is described as, after spending two decades in England, Bill Bryson returns to the US, where he decides the best way to connect with his homeland is to hike the Appalachian Trail with one of his oldest friends. So this is directed by Ken Kwapis and written by Rick Kerb, Bill Holderman, and Michael Arndt, who apparently wrote an earlier script of this. And it stars Robert Redford, Nick Nolte, Emma Thompson, Mary Steenburgen, Nick Offerman, Kristen Schaal, and a few others. So, Yazdi, what did you think of this?
So, this is based on a real story. So, Bill Bryson obviously really exists, and I've read actually a couple of his books. He writes really...
And he's a travel writer.
He's a travel writer, and all his books are travel books, but he writes with so much humor, and there's such a nice underlying wit to everything he says and does. It's kind of making fun of Americana while still being very respectful of it. So, you know, I was really looking forward to this movie. I did watch it. Listen, I mean, what can I say? I mean, this movie has a good heart, so I forgive it for a lot of things. I forgive it for a lot of things, but I do forgive it. That's all I would say.
Joe.
Yeah, I kind of come from that place too. I know exactly what you mean. I think the movie is so well-meaning. It fails in a number of instances. It just feels like a clunky comedy. And I think what I was hoping for here was, you know, kind of an older person's version of Wild, of a voyage of self-discovery. I mean, you know, when you think about the whole premise of, you know, he wants to set off on this, the setup is very much he has a friend of his who dies. He realizes that there are certain things he wants to do in life before it gets too late, and one of them is this idea of this Appalachian Trail, and he's inspired. I actually feel very inspired by this whole idea of just, you know, getting away from it all, you know, doing a 5-month trek along one of the longest and most beautiful parts of the country. The movie unfortunately falls down just in so many little ways. That's not to say I hated it, though. I didn't hate it, and I think I more than forgive it.
Okay. I don't disagree with either of you. I mean, I think this has a lovely opening. It's a very nice movie. What a great actor Robert Redford is. You know, he's able to convey so much without saying any words, and we learn a lot about this character, because I felt like what is done so well at that beginning piece is so much is endowed on him. We get such a lot of history of this character. I didn't know much about him at all, Yazdi, just by what's happening around him and what you see. So I think it's a good unfolding. I think it then falls down because it's a lost opportunity, and I can imagine someone like the Nick Nolte character, if it was played by someone like Philip Seymour Hoffman, which, alas, is no longer with us, there would have been a lot more depth. And I think I was looking for more depth in that relationship. And it came across as we kind of stumbled upon it, that history they had, and the loss of that friendship and what it meant to each one and what it didn't mean to each one by happenstance, as opposed to it being something very deliberate. And I think it's hard to do that with sleight of hand and not overplay that, and for it not to become so much of a drama and soapy and a Lifetime movie. But really, this fell into the category of a Lifetime movie for me. It didn't have anything that I could really hold on to and something that transported me or let me even identify with what it must be like to have someone so close to you lost.
Yeah, it seemed very pat.
Yeah,
you know, like everything happens and it's kind of neatly tucked away, and then next thing happens, and some of it is just silly. Like, you know, we don't need gags of, you know, somebody in a bunk bed falling on top of somebody. Yeah. That's just not funny. It's not.
That was from Step Brothers.
Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff, and I think you nailed it, Rashmi. I think if I have to pick, and I'm not. I said at the start, I forgive this movie everything. But if I had to pick something, a nit to pick, it is that it has absolutely no depth, and you know, it should have. I know this writer. He's an amazing writer, and I don't think he wrote a Lifetime movie. So I think somewhere there is Hollywood interference, or somebody has kind of roughed off all the edges. And what's happening with Nick Nolte? I mean, it looked like he was having a heart attack right there on the screen every time he was there. And that's the other very strange thing, and I don't know if it's because Robert Redford was on there, but this book was written, Bill Bryson went through this whole experience when he was 44 years old. Whereas, you know, both of those characters in the movie, the Robert Redford character and the Nick Nolte, they looked like they were in their 70s or 80s. So it gives the whole movie a very different tilt.
Yes,
it almost becomes like a geriatric, you know, wild, when I don't think that's how the book is written. So there's some things have happened to this movie. But again, you know, it's a sweet movie. Its heart is in the right place. It has Emma Thompson completely wasted, Mary Steenburgen completely wasted. But they're all there. They're doing their thing.
That's
sweet.
A weird storyline. Yeah, the Mary Steenburgen storyline is so strange. It felt like another movie. It took a right turn.
It's incomplete. I mean, I think there was more to that. Maybe it's a moment in the book that,
right?
You think about somebody escaping from the wilderness and, you know, maybe missing their wife and family, and then this, you know, somewhat attractive woman comes on the scene. You can imagine the story takes some turns to the more interesting, but it was just very odd. It felt so incomplete. You mentioned Nick Nolte, Yazdi. The other thing that this movie absolutely relies upon to work is some sort of chemistry between the two leads. And these guys were in different movies. I mean, they weren't in the same... I mean, they were in every scene together, but they weren't in the same scene. And yet, you know, the Nick Nolte character, I think, is is whatever Nick Nolte chose to do with him, or whatever's going on in his life right now that led him to play the role in that way. I could barely understand.
I didn't even know what he was saying. I did not understand what he was saying.
And by the time I tuned into kind of the cadence of that voice and was like, okay, now I'm now speaking that language. Robert Redford didn't appear to be, you know, the two of them were just, their interactions were so horribly forced. I mean, I felt like they didn't get along, you know, as actors. I mean, you know, there didn't seem to be any rehearsal or any willingness to kind of play off each other. And this movie absolutely needed that.
Great observation. I mean, again, I just feel like, it was such a lost opportunity. I mean, I can see that the point of the movie is that this Nick Nolte characters purposely seeked out Robert Redford to come on this trail with him so they can spend time together. And clearly they've spent a past lifetime together and had some connection. And so I can understand if it is supposed to be forced, like that would be funny if it worked, but it still relies on the fact that those two characters have to have chemistry. It's a really good point. I mean, the one thing I will give it is that it wasn't manipulative. This movie could have easily have been so manipulative, and it stayed on the right side of sentimental, but it was way too light. And it just had, you know, something like Wild really made you empathize with the struggles of that character. And here we had something that was as difficult to do, and yet these people had a lack of health on their side. I just didn't feel anything. I never felt danger for them.
Yeah, I just didn't feel like this was... At no point does it seem like this movie is going to probe too much. It always felt like this movie is always going to stay at the surface. It felt like it didn't want to get too serious, like it would offend its demographic or something. It almost wanted to be steer clear of anything remotely thorny or weighty or you know, unpleasant even. I mean, you know, a couple years ago, there was a movie which came out which did horribly at the box office, but I absolutely adored it. It was a movie called... it had Steve Martin and Jack
Black. The Bird One. Yeah, called, that was lovely. That reminded me as well. It was that Bird competition.
The Big Year. And that movie was so cute. And that movie had a lot of energy and heart. And there's this whole thing about a father and a son. And it just was so effortless. And this movie is not even in the same ballpark.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I think it has going, it's beautiful cinematography. Mm-hmm. Beautiful cinematography. And I did like the use of like these... original songs. But again, it seemed like a different movie. Those songs didn't fit the movie that we watched. Great soundtrack, very folky, fun, interesting. I don't know. I've said all I want to say about this one.
Which is one other point. This movie is an R rating, and it's done so for language, which...
Yeah, there's a lot of Fs in it.
I know, but...
Which they could have done away with.
I was going to say, they were almost entirely unnecessary. And that to me just seems like a travesty because otherwise the way that this was laid out could have been kind of a family comedy.
Yeah.
Right. And I think they could have gotten away with that, but for whatever reason they left the language in there and, you know, okay, maybe that there's justification for that, but, it puts an edge on something that, and it's a forced edge that could have done without.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it's interesting. The title is even like, A Walk in the Woods. You know, it's kind of like...
All right, move along. A Walk in the Woods. Score it.
It's nice. It's sweet. It's okay. It's a missed opportunity. It's really a walk in the woods. 4 out of 10.
Yow.
It's okay. I mean, you know, that's mean. Maybe 5.
Yes, Dee, what's your forgiven score?
I will forgive it and give it a 5.5, which I will bump up to 6 because I just don't get to see Emma Thompson enough on screen. And she's the one person in this movie who just completely grounds every piece of dialogue she has. She makes it all worthwhile. It's a sweet movie. I kind of feel churlish, you know, panning it, but, you know, it really is a missed
opportunity. Could have done better.
Could have done better. I mean, you know, Back of an Airplane, by all means, watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially when you're like trying to sleep.
Oh,
no, you had to throw that on.
You know that period when you're like, you've eaten, and then, you know, you're kind of like, oh, I shall watch.
All right.
And I don't know if this is Nick Nolte's plea for help. I don't know what's going on with him, but I worry for him. Anyway, 6 out of 10. Joe?
Just because of that, I'm going to give it an absurdly high 7 out of 10.
No.
Because, honestly, in the moment, I kind of enjoyed it. This kind of had that goofball comedy feel, and it doesn't work. But I did enjoy the moment, and I really enjoyed the premise. I really enjoyed.
Well, you are the guy who hikes every right. weekend.
The subject matter, and come on, Robert Redford. That's enough for me to kind of.
But
give...
come on, he did all his lots but look last at, year. Look at I mean, the, look at that.
Look at the odd.
I liked it.
Look at the odd couple.
I stand by my 7.
Look at grumpy old men. You know, those are all.
I stand by my 7.
Yes, you should hold it. You should hold it. Yes.
Primarily because Rashmi was so mean.
Okay, what if I up mine really to a 5?
Then I'll bring mine down to a 6.
Okay, but... there you go then.
Okay,
that's,
5.
That's yes. more reasonable than I think.
7.
5, 6, and 6.
6 and a 6, yes. I think, is way reasonable for this movie. We no. shall not allow your 7 in this podcast this week.
Overruled. Okay, moving on. Learning to Drive.
So Learning to Drive is the latest movie from director Isabelle Coixet. I guess that's how you pronounce her last name, Coixet. And she's made a few movies before, including one that I really liked with Penelope Cruz and Ben Kingsley called Elegy. Here she is in a movie called Learning to Drive. It stars Patricia Clarkson as a New York writer who finds out that her husband's going to leave her after almost 2 decades of matrimony. And she is completely lost, and during that time, she realizes that she needs to learn to drive, because living in Manhattan, she's never had reason to learn how to get behind the wheel of a car. And by virtue of the man who gave her a cab, she learns how to drive from an immigrant living in New York at the time. He's a Sikh Indian instructor, played by Ben Kingsley, and the rest of the movie is about how the two of them interact and help each other out. And that's Learning to Drive.
So what do you guys think about it? Screening, I've got to say.
Oh my God.
This is one of the most packed screenings we've ever been to.
Well, let's put some context around that. It was in a smaller theater, and it was also done with a local film society, the local San Diego Cinema Society. So I think it was definitely a movie that I think has received some
correct
upfront praise, and so I think as you know, a lot of people wanted to see it, but you're right, it was standing room only.
Yeah, and in fact we almost, the three of us didn't get seats for this one, but the reason I'm saying it was a packed screening is
crazy.
Just that it was, I've never seen as packed a screening, and I'm kind of saying that because people are sort of excited to see this one.
Yes.
And it was an older audience.
And it was an older demographic, yeah. Okay, so I'll start by saying, you know, who knew that learning to drive a car could be metaphorically similar to going through the ebbs and flows of life? But here's where it falls down for me. Other than the fact that one character is teaching the other to drive, there's actually little connecting these two people. And so these could have been two entirely different movies. I don't understand the point of this movie. Is it forbidden love? I don't know. I'm a little bit lost.
I mean,
Joseph.
this movie was very reserved, I think, in terms of the way it told its story. But I had just a hard time with the overall setup of the movie. I think it was crafted to forcibly put these two characters together at a point in their life when they may be romantically interested, and it all felt very fake to me. I think when you look at the really? Premise of this movie and the premise of the last movie, the one that we just spent our time panning, I actually feel that that one had a more realistic setup than this movie altogether. So,
I agree.
What's come over the two of you?
I know. So,
where is your heart? Find it.
Back in Digging for Fire.
So now that I've got that off my chest,
yes.
I think the movie actually was very well made. I think in terms of its writing, its the acting performances in the movie, and its overall storytelling, I think it was very well executed. But the whole premise to me was very weak and very forced.
I'm dying to hear what you thought.
I loved it. I really did. I'm very cynical about these kinds of things. It did not feel very forced. I mean, in a way, every time you go to watch a movie, right, everything is a contrivance. We know that these actors are not these characters. They're playing them. But I think it's very reasonable for a woman in Manhattan to learn driving from an Indian instructor. I don't think that's that far-fetched. And I think to the movie's great credit, it never makes it obvious or overt that there is any kind of thing romantic. Maybe there is a codependency, a sense of maybe the slightest hint of attraction from one person. It's never a deep beating kind of unrequited love. I think it was more about two people kind of helping each other out. And again, I know that sounds corny, but I mean, I give this movie a lot of props for one thing and one thing alone, and that to me is enough, is that this movie has great affection for immigrants. And I know this is a very, very politically contested situation right now, and I think this movie makes the case very quietly about this is how immigrants live. They're very different than you. They wear turbans. They might be scary, but this is how they live their lives. And I think it's very effective that, particularly when it comes to the Sikh culture in India, these are turban-wearing men who everybody gets very scared about, it kind of opens up that culture. The movie kind of shows you those individuals going and praying and those individuals cooking and leading their lives. And I think that's good. People need to see that. So this fear of those who are different goes away. So I know a movie should not be lauded just for its political efforts, but I think it's very commendable from that perspective that it has so much affection for immigrants.
We're bursting to react, Gom Rashmi.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so that's where it completely fell down for me, Yazdi. I applaud that it's trying to bring a very specific type of Indian culture to the mainstream. Having been of that culture, being of that culture, that's totally my culture. That's where I'm from. Many things went wrong here for me. First of all, can we not find an Indian man besides Ben Kingsley to play a turbaned Sikh man? I so wanted to like this movie more, but I had a complete problem with the ethnicity of it. I kept asking myself, if it wasn't about this particular type of Indian culture, would I have had problems with it? And I don't know the answer, but it didn't feel authentic. And I feel like it relied on that ethnicity to move the story forward. But again, I can't find the connection with the other character, which I said at the beginning. The whole exposition about arranged marriage and immigration just killed me. I mean, this took arranged marriage back to the days before my parents even had an arranged marriage. And that was semi-arranged 50-something years ago. That's not to say I'm denying the fact that it goes on. But really, I mean, really, that's the type of image that we're showing of these people? It just didn't feel authentic at all. I mean, and this is a man who's supposed to be, what, in his late 40s, early 50s?
So it's late 50s,
it's really, really poorly done. I mean, it's just, it so fell down for me on all of those fronts. Why do we have to see people praying? Why do you have to spend so much time?
No, that was one of the more beautiful moments.
I mean, it's beautiful, but it didn't move the story forward.
No, it said a lot about the character and the culture.
I think it's because you could leave him as a turban man that you don't find out much about, and people will continue to fear anybody with a turban. And when you show that person as being, you know, somewhat spiritual, I think it helps the cause. I really do. I will completely agree with you. I think, and I'm. You know, I never say this, but I think Ben Kingsley's too old for the role, and he's frankly the wrong ethnicity. I think somebody like an Irfan Khan from The Lunchbox would have been perfect for this role.
Yes, even if not too old.
Like the girl that he gets married to, Sarita Chaudhary, looks She's like his
brilliant.
Daughter.
She's
So I think I mean Ben Kingsley is a bigger name actor, and you know this director is European, but yeah, I mean yes, I think the movie needs to be called out for the fact that if you're it's not like there's a shortage of Indians in the world. God knows there's too many. I'm one of them.
It continues with The Martian that we spoke about at the beginning of the podcast with the casting of Chiwetel Ejiofor as Venkat Kapoor. I'm going to be interested to see how that works out. But yeah, it's a sad state, really, if you're an Indian actor, that these roles are going
there
to people
really,
who aren't Indian.
There are some really, really good Indian actors out there. I mean,
but as movie wallahs, maybe you have personal biases there. One other point, I mean, I think my I've kind of figured out while you guys were talking what I think irritated me more than anything about this movie was just how manipulative it was. And I think you, yes, you mentioned the whole immigration. Mm-hmm. Well, there are some scenes in the movie which were created purely to provide a context for sympathy, right? There were moments of there were moments of racism against that character that there was no build up towards them. They just popped out of nowhere, and it was great. It just felt manipulative in the sense of here's a moment where we can have the Patricia Clarkson character realize just what it's like for the Ben Kingsley character to be an Indian in America.
But that happens.
Are
you saying this doesn't happen? A turban we don't see too many people with a turban in San Diego, but I bet if there was one, that person would get, out of the blue, you would get slurs.
So I guess thematically, I'm questioning it. I think the movie wasn't necessarily out there to make those points. That moment felt to me like it was more geared towards having the Patricia Clarkson character feel sympathy for the Ben Kingsley character, as opposed to having some larger dialogue in general about the state of the world today. So, you know, the sheer bigotry of the immigration police, you know, that came around. Again, I don't deny that that's what happens, but the way that that moment was portrayed just felt so inserted. And I don't know, that just speaks to kind of the manipulation that the movie was playing to me from start to finish. I mean, Patricia Clarkson character, I understand where she is, but, you know, there was just a lot of cliches in there about her husband running off with a younger woman, and then, you know,
but the there's fact a that reason she, those instead are cliches, instead of
learning
to drive,
she may as well be learning to cook.
Absolutely.
You know, or yeah, baking a cake. Or yeah. And I don't know, the whole thing just felt so checkbox oriented. We've seen this type of story before, and this movie was trying to hit those same beats.
But there's a reason it's a cliche. Men are leaving women as we speak all the time. It happens, right? So I mean, I didn't find it offensive. I think the point the movie was trying to make is they wanted to take two characters and put them as far apart as possible. So if you're starting with, you know, an American middle-aged woman who is a writer, who could be the person who would be as far removed from her? It would have to be somebody from a different culture, somebody who has a very different set of morals, somebody who has a different language, somebody who is not as well settled as she is. Is it a contrivance? Yes, but it is putting two characters who are very, very different, and what she's going through with her marriage versus what he's going through with her marriage, I think it's a good juxtaposition. And I think the movie could have been a lot more heavy-handed than it was. I think it goes over a lot of issues about how he deals with his wife, how she deals. I mean, there is no, she doesn't, thank God she doesn't find a great guy who she gets married to. I mean, it's all left quite.
But the thing you just mentioned there is exactly the problem I'm talking about. It's like, who could we pick that would be the exact juxtaposition for this particular character? It's like, why don't we do this, check, this, check, this, check, this, check. And that's, again, maybe I'm being a little too harsh on the writers here, but it just felt so unreal that they would find themselves in this situation and engage in the way that they did. And
yeah, I mean, you wouldn't take your driving student to the airport to pick up your would-be wife.
You would if you were in an accident and you had to pick up your would-be wife in the next 20 minutes.
Taxi. Come on. I mean,
no, it was, they were coming back from I don't know where. There was,
so that was conveniently gone. Timed accident again.
Yeah, but isn't that every plot in every movie? Why are you picking on this one?
Because it didn't every work. Movie. Because it felt so scripted. And that
it did
that
not feel scripted to me at all. At all. I mean, I was with it. I mean, I guess it depends on whether you buy those characters or not.
Right. Maybe you're right there.
I mean. I think a good movie would have been the movie about Ben Kingsley being a driving instructor, settling into life in America, and bringing his wife over. That would have actually been a very adequate movie, and her settling in, but then that wouldn't get maybe the audience that it had. I don't know. So, I don't know. I just felt like, you know, overall, this came across much more of a Lifetime movie. We were talking about this in one of our other podcasts. It felt like a made-for-TV movie than a Hollywood, you know, even small miniature blockbuster. But great acting. Look, fantastic acting by Patricia Clarkson, Ben Kingsley, and Sarita Chowdhury. Amazing acting.
Should I go next? This movie worked for me from the start. I mean, I think the one fault I will grant you is in the casting of the male lead. But short of that, I think the movie was, it's about two different people coming together. I like that kind of shit. What can I say? Any chance that Hollywood can provide Patricia Clarkson to lead a movie, yes, I'm going to stand behind that. She's such a great actor. I mean, really, she should be spoken of in the same breath as Meryl Streep. As I far agree. As I'm concerned, she's not perfect.
Whose daughter is in this movie?
Also, very good. You know, very annoying in other movies recently, including Ricky and the Flash, but so good here.
No, this is her other daughter.
Oh, this is her other daughter. This is Grace.
Looks very similar.
This is Grace Kummer. Correct. That one was Mammy. Yeah. But I love this movie. I was in tears more than one occasion.
It
moved me. It really moved me. 8 out of 10. I would recommend this movie to everyone.
Oh, you sneakily summed that up there.
Didn't you?
No, I'll give it one score after.
I thought we were summing up.
Oh
never mind.
Okay, Joe.
Look, I mean, this movie is very accomplished. It's very well written. It's very, very well acted, and the direction overall is competent. I think, for me, its beats are just a little too obvious and telegraphed, and maybe the subtlety of the script was lost on me, but I felt like they were going for something that was really aimed at a specific demographic, at a specific feeling, and you know, as a result, the whole setup didn't quite come together in the way that it should have. This movie should have been deeply affecting. I was hoping to have, you know, maybe a lunchbox type experience, I came away a little disappointed. So, didn't hate this movie. Again, there's a lot to admire here, but I really can't stretch to more than a 7 out of 10. And that's me being generous, because I think that's a little higher than I think I enjoyed it. But I can see why others will.
An okay, albeit far-fetched story saved by brilliant acting, 6 out of 10.
Okay.
Learning to drive. So let's wrap up for today.
Yes.
Mail at moviewallers.com, twitter.com/moviewallers, facebook.com/moviewallers. Where are we? We have about 500 fans on Facebook. It hovers around there. So if you are listening and you are not a fan of us on Facebook, please join. We post there regularly, and it's a great place to get updates on MovieWallers and look at our Star Wars mugshots.
Yes.
I was going to say, if nothing else, just to look at our Star Wars homage.
Courtesy of a Star Wars The Force Awakens app that we used while waiting for a screening to start this week.
I can't wait for that movie.
So,
I'm scared.
Yeah, I'm scared too, but I want to see it.
So until our next podcast, too many movies, too little time. Good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.